Welcome to Meals for Maturity, Bible talks to help you mature as a follower of Jesus, by Pastor Dom Fiocco.
Not that I know firsthand, but I do know from observation as a pastor and also as a father of three daughters, that no pregnancy is easy. 9 months of carrying around a growing watermelon, a lack of sleep, massive changes in hormones and health, and then, of course, the anxiety of always thinking about what you put into your mouth might just impact the development of the little one growing inside you. No pregnancy is easy. But then to hear that twins are growing and being knit together in a mother's womb must be doubly not easy. Twins, buy one, get one free, or perhaps double trouble. Well, the pregnancy we're about to learn in Genesis 25 is going to be a tumultuous one. But then it will simply mirror the tumultuous story to follow about these twins. Welcome to a Meals Maturity series on the outrageous grace, the gospel at work in Jacob's life. We pick up the story in Genesis 25 verse 19 where we read, "These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Isaac." It's a formula phrase that we hear over 10 times across Genesis, basically giving us various family trees and showing us that God is keeping his promises. First from Genesis chapter 3 verse 15, remember, in providing a seed of the woman who will one day come and crush the serpent's head. And secondly, from Genesis chapter 12 verses 1 to 3, that God is proving faithful to the four P's promised to the big daddy Abraham. And after hearing about the generations of Ishmael, Isaac's half-brother, in verse 12 of Genesis 25, it's now Isaac's turn. And so we turn to Isaac's family tree, the hope of the nations, the promised line of God's covenant people, and we find that the tree is rather empty. We stopped in the last Bible talk with a barren Rebecca, chapter 25, verse 21a, a barren Rebecca and a begging Isaac, begging God in prayer for 20 years that he would open the womb of his blessed wife. It's pretty hard for the chosen covenant line of God without a biological starter kit, isn't it? Abraham's family is not exactly looking like this great nation, certainly at this stage. Well, let's pick the story up and hear what God will do.
Genesis chapter 25, verses 19 to 26. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Aramean of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Aramean, to be his wife. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah his wife conceived. The children struggled together within her, and she said, "If it is thus, why is this happening to me?" So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, "Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other. The older shall serve the younger." When her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak, so they called his name Esau. Afterward, his brother came out with his hand holding Esau's heel, so his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them.
We soon learn that Isaac turns to the prayer way rather than the Abraham and Sarah plotting way to have a child through the servant girl Hagar, remember back in Genesis 16. You see, Isaac is a good model of godliness and trust at this point in time. And then we can imagine old Isaac, laugh to himself, having a good laugh when the news finally comes from his wife that she's expecting. Clearly, we're meant to see that she is pregnant because of God's mighty intervention, God's sovereignty at work, despite years and years of waiting. And so Isaac clearly models godliness in his waiting and praying. But so too does Rebekah's piety shine through. In verse 22, we find her going to the Lord in prayer as well. And like her husband at this point in the storyline, her godly character shines. And God in his kindness hears her prayer and responds, all in one verse. She's praying as she carries twins that have come about as a result of 20 years of persevering prayer. So barrenness is no longer the issue. It's the battle that's the problem. See, Rebecca wants to know why these two bubs in her womb are kicking her so much. But the answer comes back from God. Those two kids are not kicking you, they're punching each other. In fact, the Hebrew word used in verse 22 for struggling together is literally smashing together. You see, even before they're toddlers smashing into each other's imaginary camels and carts, World War III seems to be happening in the womb of Rebecca. And there's not much room in the womb for kickboxing competitions. So Rebecca cries out to God, "What's happening inside my womb today, Lord?" And in verse 23, God gives her and us the answer. The issue isn't that she was just carrying active twins, it's that she's carrying within her two nations. And already she's told of the future and the division, the animosity, the enmity that will follow between her two boys. And she's also told by God something else that must have been bewildering to mum and dad to hear. And of course, this will cause theologians down the ages to spill lots of ink and to drink too much coffee and even to argue away so that sometimes Bible colleges might split and divide over which twin they want to follow. But the word from God is clear as day, even though we like to add a bit of fog to the matter. Verse 23, "And the Lord said to her, 'Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. The one shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger.'" Now, if you've been reading Genesis up to this point in time, at one level, we shouldn't be too surprised. I mean, God's done this older serving the younger thingo before. Abel, the younger, is accepted over Cain, the elder. The line of Seth is chosen over the line of Cain. Isaac the younger is chosen over older brother Ishmael. And later on we'll see Rachel is chosen by God before her older sister Leah. And then to really annoy 11 brothers, Joseph at the end of the Genesis story is picked ahead of his older siblings. So God telling Rebecca that the younger twin will rule over the older twin is not something left field. But then again, it must have been strange to hear and for Rebecca and Isaac to process. See, the principle in Old Testament times of the elder being the favoured and blessed one and receiving dad's material inheritance and all the responsibility and stress that comes from that, it's now being overturned yet again by God's eternal decree and plans. The conventional rights of the younger to serve the older is being reversed. One writer puts it well, "The order of nature is not necessarily the order of grace." And as we'll see time and time again, God's ways are so extraordinarily different than ours. You just have to think again about the gospel story, Jesus on the cross, to see that. A suffering Saviour, yet a victorious Lord. A lamb that is slain, yet the Lion of Judah roars. Now, I'm sure pregnant mums would love the fact that we go from verse 23 to verse 24, and in one breath, Rebecca gives birth to the twins. If only it was that quick, hey? And so verse 25 gives us the dramatic delivery birth details. First about Esau, and then a post on Isaac and Rebecca's Facebook page. "Isaac and Rebecca are pleased to announce the birth of baby number one. We're calling him Esau. It reminds us of red. Don't laugh. It's a good solid name to describe this hairy, red-haired, red-faced young fella. Maybe one day he'll meet a lady in red and like red, red wine with his red, red buffalo steak." And then verse 26 and the next big announcement. "Isaac and Rebecca are pleased to announce the birth of boy number two. We're calling him Jacob. reminds us of heel, for he came out clutching at Esau's heel. We're not sure what that's all about. Anyway, thanks for your prayers. Maybe you could keep praying for us and the twins. The pregnancy was a real battle as they squished together, but I reckon they'll be just great friends. The choice of baby names across the Old Testament world and even into New Testament times is often related to the birth story or the hopes and dreams of mum and dad for their bundle of joy just born. Esau could mean both red or hairy. Jacob could mean either heel or supplanter. Esau seems to be named around his appearance, Jacob named around his actions. Both names become important across the rest of the drama to follow. It's a common story that twins have always captured the human imagination. Twins will tell you that strangers will often stop them on the street just to chat to them about twinning. Identical twins, of course, will get even more stares from strangers as they try and work out why they're seeing double. But you don't have to be identical to capture people's attention. And today, twins can make lots of money if they're attractive, if they have the right connections, if they display skill and expertise in particular fields. And so we have famous twins like Robin and Maurice Gibb, along with their older brother Barry. And so come the BGs, who unfortunately are no longer staying alive. Then there's Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen. They act together in some movies. No doubt they tricked their teachers at school when they were growing up. Steve and Mark Waugh, they carried Australia through many Ashes battles against England in the cricket. Then there's the Bella twins. They apparently wrestle away and make lots of money and then beauty products. The musicians Benji and Joel Madden decide to be Good Charlotte. Perhaps Bad Charlotte was just too bad to make music together. The thing about these famous twins, and you might be able to think of others as well, and infamous twins, is that for most of them, they like each other in some way or form, and so they decide to team up. They team resources and they excel together. But if you know anything about the twins, Esau and Jacob, in our Bible stories to come, well, there's not a lot of love and working together. In fact, it would make for a pretty amazing reality TV show with the ratings through the roof because of the conflict that's to come. Peter Sellers plays the American president in that old movie Dr. Strangelove. And in a scene with his military generals, he's debating what to do with the Russians and the nuclear warheads. And so he cries out, "Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room." Well, it's the war womb and room and chapters for Esau and Jacob about to come. There's much drama to follow after their birth. So stay tuned for some bewildering battles and with more twists and turns than a Rubik's Cube in a playground of 12-year-olds. As the first twin, Esau, he should be the one to inherit the status that comes with the firstborn child. But it's God who chooses otherwise. It is God who does the unconventional and breaks all our human rules. It is God who decides to favour Jacob over Esau, the younger over the elder. Well, what do we do with that? Well, we examine the scriptures and we humbly seek to follow what they tell us. And we grow in our understanding of our infinite God, despite our finite minds. Paul, in Romans chapter 9, verses 10 to 15, picks up on this birth story from Genesis 25. We read in Romans 9, "When Rebekah had conceived children by one man, our forefather Isaac, though they were not yet born and had done nothing either good or bad, in order that God's purpose of election might continue, not because of works, but because of him who calls, she was told, 'The older will serve the younger.' As it is written, 'Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated.' What shall we say then? Is there injustice on God's part? By no means. For he says to Moses, 'I will have mercy on whom I have mercy, and I'll have compassion on whom I have compassion.'" The principle at play in Genesis 25 and in Romans 9 is as simple as this. God doesn't choose people based on merit. He doesn't choose them based on what they do or have done or will do. Rather, he chooses to save and work in people based on his sovereign grace. What is the reason God chooses the junior Jacob over the elder Esau? What is the reason given in Romans chapter 9? Well, it's the one we so often struggle with, but it's there and it can't be changed or liquid papered out or cancelled out of our Bibles. It's grace, infinite grace, God's sovereign electing grace at work from the womb to Jacob's birth, through his life, as we'll see, right up to his death. We might even call it outrageous grace. Later on, we read in Romans chapter 9, verses 18 to 23 onwards, "So then he has mercy, God has mercy on whomever he wills, and he hardens whomever he wills." And Paul writes, "You will say to me then, why does he still find fault? For who can resist his will? But who are you, O man, O woman, to answer back to God? Will what is moulded say to its moulder, why have you made me like this? Has the potter no right over the clay to make out of the same lump one vessel for honourable use and another for dishonourable use? What if God, desiring to show his wrath and to make known his power, has endured with much patience vessels of wrath prepared for destruction in order to make known the riches of his glory for vessels of mercy, which he has prepared beforehand for glory?" Charles Spurgeon once gave this simple illustration, which I think helps us help us to fathom this outrageous grace. He preached, "There's a man up there in the gallery that works hard, yet he cannot earn more than 15 shillings a week. And here is another man that gets 1,000 a year. What is the reason of this? One is born in the palaces of kings, while another draws his first breath in a roofless barn. What is the reason of this? God's providence, God's grace. God does not treat every person the same. He has made some eagles and some worms. He has made some lions and some creeping lizards. He has made some men kings and some are born beggars. Some are born with gigantic minds and some verge on the idiot." Can you hear what Spurgeon is trying to illustrate? It's the principle of Deuteronomy 29, verse 29. "The secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may follow all the words of this law." Now remember, brothers and sisters, God does not have to consult us when it comes to the ruling of his universe and deciding who he chooses to save. Read the back end of the book of Job to be put back in your place sometime. Or think about the lump of clay that you are and the great potter that God is. Is Genesis 25, verse 23, a difficult verse to grasp as Jacob grasps the heel of his older brother? Of course it is. But it's no more difficult than you and me trying to work out why and how God places his electing grace upon us. For none of us deserve what we've been given in the gospel of all grace. Jacob, as we'll soon find out, certainly doesn't deserve or could possibly earn God's kindness and favour. And yet, that is what he and we will get. Outrageous grace. 1 John chapter 3, verse 1. "Behold, what manner of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God, and so we are." Deserving of God's wrath and judgment because of our sinfulness from the womb to the tomb. And yet, God the Father loves us and adopts us into his family, along with all the Jacobs that he chooses down through the ages. And at one level, if you are not scandalized and outraged by God's grace in this early story of Jacob, then perhaps you haven't fully grasped grace. Grace that is somehow earned defeats the very definition of grace, doesn't it? Grace based on our directives, our doings, our delightfulness is not grace at all. And if the battlefield in the womb of Rebecca tells us anything, followed by God's choice of the younger twin, then surely it points us to see that it's grace from start to finish. Outrageous grace that Jacob neither deserves, but then again, are we any different? Rejoice right now, whatever you're doing. Stop and thank God for his outrageous grace in choosing you before the foundation of the world. And rejoice that God operates in the realm of grace so that he alone gets the glory.
Thanks for listening to Meals for Maturity. Keep growing in the grace and knowledge of our Lord and Saviour, Jesus Christ.